chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it, time ain't no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make to have in the middle of it. Rest make to have in the middle. We are rest make to have.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Buck. We're going to start off with a Greg Reese announcement about these school shootings. Here we go with Greg Reese.
Perhaps the most evil display of deception and murder we are subjected to today are found in the new phenomenon of mass school shootings. Prior to 1999, they were practically non-existent, but today they have almost become predictable. And if you are able to examine the evidence objectively, without getting emotional, a pattern can be recognized. Former Naval Intelligence Officer turned whistleblower Milton William Cooper wrote in his book, Behold a Pale Horse, published in 1991, that the CIA was using drugs and hypnosis on mental patients in order to persuade them to open fire on schoolyards to inflame the anti-gun lobby and do away with the Second Amendment. This probably sounds outlandishly evil, and it is, but the evidence is there. In the Columbine shootings of 1999, we are told that Eric Harris and Dylan Klybolt acted alone. The town of Columbine, Colorado, was created in 1958 for families and employees of the military-industrial complex. Eric and Dylan were arrested a year prior to the shooting and were allegedly sodomized by the arresting officer, which may sound crazy, but a local officer admitted to raping informants, which is a known method of trauma-based mind control. After this January incident, Eric and Dylan were put into a juvenile diversion program and prescribed SSRI drugs known to cause homicidal ideation. During this time, Eric Harris was making online death threats and bomb threats. Local police were aware of this and drafted a search warrant affidavit, but it was ignored. Eric and Dylan threatened revenge for the January incident in their yearbook. They produced a school video about their plans and began openly collecting weapons, all of this while on probation, and nothing was done about it. During the shootings, the police stood outside the building and did nothing, while the sounds of automatic gunfire and explosions continued for hours. In official transcripts, there are over 100 witnesses who saw more than two shooters, and more than 40 witnesses who identified the same two men in their 30s, one balding and the other with a short military-style haircut. Several witnesses described the same adult male throwing a pipe bomb on the roof of the library, all of them certain that it wasn't Dylan or Eric. And all of this information pertaining to additional shooters has been redacted. The FBI agent in charge of the Columbine investigation had a son who recently attended the school, who shot a student film inside Columbine High 2 years before the shooting about a character wearing a trench coat shooting up the school. Dylan and Eric fantasized about hijacking an airplane and crashing it into a New York City skyscraper in 1999. Are these just strange coincidences or remnants of the Fed's MKUltra program? An honest investigation into any of the mass school shootings following Columbine will have the same signatures, such as families involved in the military-industrial complex, prescribed SSRIs and other psychotropic drugs, psychological care provided by the state, and associations with law enforcement prior to the shootings. Just like we saw with the retired federal agent in regular communication with the Buffalo gunman in a private Discord chat room. And in the recent Texas school shooting, how is the perpetrator able to afford nearly $5,000 of weaponry? And why did the police stand down while children were slaughtered? We are still allowed to question these things, but for how long? This evil will never stop until the truth is exposed. And unfortunately, most of us are too emotional to see things as they really are. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
David Icke is coming up next with an overall view. He's speaking to a large crowd over in England, and he's laying out 1984, Brave New World, different ideas like that. But he ties a lot of good things together. So here we go with David Icke, and just a good overview to begin the program with tonight. Here we go with David Icke.
Oh, cheers, Gaza. You know that boy? He's not a boy. He's a man, but he's my boy. He was offered a lot of money to be supported, to become a big pro. And the condition was he distanced himself from me and what I'm saying, and preferably changed his name. And off was the second thing he told them. Hey, fantastic. And what a frickin' talent. Now, we're gonna bring this down to today, what's bloody happening now. So we sort out the wheat from the chaff and all this massive things that happens in the news every day. And when you see it connected, you can see what's going on. We've had the Archon hijack, I've talked about that, and how they feed off human energy, how they've locked us in this frequency field, frequency range, and how all these different aspects of society actually have the same master. And if you are deep enough in this web, then you can start to access what the projected future of this conspiracy is, and you can start to write novels that appear to be from imagination, but actually they're from knowledge of where the projected future is going. And when people like me have written books years and years ago about things that are now unfolding, it's really simple. If you can access the projected agenda and nothing comes to intervene in that projected agenda, then the projected agenda is going to happen, and therefore you predicted the future. But the idea is not to predict the future, it's to alert people so we head that future off. And that's what today's about, and that's what this section's about, because I'm relating it very much to today. That changed itself just by doing my shirt. That's a miracle. Of course, George Orwell and Aldous Huxley, 1984 and Brave New World, they knew each other. Huxley taught Orwell, real name Eric Blair, French at the elite Eton College, and they were friends, and they had access to this projected agenda. And I've been saying for a long time that Brave New World and 1984 were not from the imagination, not entirely anyway, they were from knowledge of the future. And that's why they've been so prophetic, so amazingly bloody accurate in terms of how things have unfolded. Now, one of the connections they had was into a secret society called the Fabian Society, which is behind things like the creation of the British Labour Party, also very active in Australia, and was behind the London School of Economics and all that. And the Fabian Society has a logo, a wolf in sheep's clothing, which actually gives it all away, really. It doesn't mean if you're in this Fabian Society, you're into the conspiracy, but the inner core knows what's bloody going on. And if you can get into that inner core, you can predict the future, and that's what those two did. Now, it wasn't just a story, 1984. It was knowledge of the future, and that future is now, and that's why so much is coming that he talked about. Now, I'm not going to go through all this, but I will pick ones out as I go through the various subjects. This is another example of this prior knowledge of this projected agenda. This is a guy called Dr. Richard Day. In 1969, he was a Rockefeller insider. He was involved in an executive of Planned Parenthood, which started out as a eugenics operation. I'll mention that as we go through, which again is connected in ways to the Fabian Society. And he stood up in 1969 to a conference of pediatricians in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He asked them to put down their recording equipment and not take notes, because he was going to tell them how the world was going to change. Why this guy did this night, no one seems to know, but he did. And one of the doctors did take notes and did some interviews later saying what this guy had said in 1969. What he said is the world that is unfolding and we're living in now. And he said it in 1969, which wasn't a kind of million years ahead of 1948 when 1984 came out. But I'll mention some of that what he said as I pick out different subjects as I go through. Now, what they are doing is manipulating us to either build or accept the building of our own prison and masquerade it as freedom or protecting us from terrorism and all that shite. And it's systematic. This is a guy called Edward Bernays, and he is known as the father of what we would call today spin, social engineering, manipulating perceptions. And he said, we are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of, in almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking. We are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they which pull who pull the wires which control the public mind. In other words, understand how we create reality and interact with reality and then download and program your version of reality that you want people to believe. It's systematic. And here is a wonderful example of it, Archon Education. If only it was. Control perception and you control reality, and you can get them as young as you can and implant their reality from the earliest possible age. Here we are, buses waiting to take inmates to the programming centres, because that is basically what they are. And teachers overwhelmingly have no idea that that's what they are. They're pawns in the game as well. They are passing on the curriculum and teaching in ways that they are told to teach, which is programming a perception of reality by emphasizing that and ignoring or suppressing alternatives to it. Einstein said brilliantly, everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing it is stupid. What schools, what education should be in a natural order world is not how do we get children to be what we want them to be, but how do we get the best and the potential out of every child in their unique sense and unique self. That's what education should be. But like I say, we live in an inversion, and so we get the opposite of that. What we get is this. Have you noticed how they say, these politicians, about education, we must prepare children for the workplace? In other words, we must prepare unique expressions of all that is, has been, and ever can be to be a cog in a freaking machine for the rest of their bloody life. The system should fit us. We should not fit the system. So, J.D. Rockefeller, creator of the General Education Board in 1903, he said, I don't want a nation of thinkers, I want a nation of workers. Exactly. That's what the education system's about. It's a sausage machine programming system. And this study here, I won't go into it for time, but what this study showed is the longer that children are at school, there's a massive decline in creativity as children have become less emotionally expressive, less energetic, less talkative and verbally expressive, less humorous, less imaginative, less unconventional, less lively and passionate, less perceptive, less apt to connect seemingly irrelevant things, dots, less synthesizing and less likely to see things from a different angle. It's a program. And this is what is taught to children at school. What school teaches children, truth comes from authority, intelligence is the ability to remember and repeat, accurate memory and repetition are rewarded, non-compliance is punished, conform intellectually and socially. That's what it's about. And the very bloody fact that vast numbers of young people have been through this shit and they've come out awakened to the fact that they're not being told the truth is a wonderful example of the power of consciousness over program. School's out. Oh, the 6 week holiday. I'm out of prison. They're prisons. They're prisons. You have a few kind of years of kind of you know, out of prison when you're a little kid, and then you're in prison. Some bloody authority figure's telling you when you can go for a pee. You see that thing the other day in America? They're saying that children can't go for to the toilet during lesson time unless they have a doctor's note. These people are mad. And talking of mad, two-year-olds should start school, shed Ofsted teeth. What it should say is, two-year-olds should start school, says two-year-old Ofsted chief. Bloody idiot. But what did Richard Day say to that doctor's convention in 1969? Schools will become the hub of the community. In other words, they will take more and more and more power from parents, which is exactly what's happening. Another thing he said, children will spend longer at school but learn less. That's the idea. State schools should offer 12-hour days to boost performance of poor students, says Department for Education. Preparing kids for the brave new world. And what they do is they lock people into the left side of the brain and they take them out of their individuality, their creativity, so they become cogs in the machine. For me, no child should go near school until the age of 6 or 7, and then school very, very different. They should play and they should let their imagination flow so their right brain is wide bloody open. There you go. The original PlayStation. Hey. And this bloke's going to have a few mentions in the next couple of hours. Bloody hell. Bill Gates. He's involved in this thing in America called Common Core. Common Core. Make everyone the bloody same. It's about imposing even more limitations on what we call learning and education and more programming. And it's kind of the way they do it. Here's an example. They're saying in this test, change the sentence in a certain way. And the way the sentence is changed is made to read in a way that programs perception. This one. A president's job is not easy. He makes sure the country's laws are fair. Government officials' commands must be obeyed by all, and individuals' wants are less important than the nation's well-being. It's all put in this program. Now, I think an expert test taker would fill in the form something like this, myself. And then we might get somewhere. Here's George Carlin. Here's a bumper sticker I'd like to see. We are proud parents of a child who has resisted his teacher's attempts to break his spirit and bend him to the will of his corporate masters. Thank you. Put that in the back window.
Before we got another Greg Reese briefing here on Satanism. We just got to put that in here. We're going to wave that in between some of these things. And then we're going to bring up some Bilderberg programs, one by Alex. And then Jay Dyer is going to give us some right at the very end. But we're going to cover also Peter Navarro was arrested up in Washington. And we're going to cover what he had to say about his arrest.
There are many preconceived notions about what defines Satanism. Some people will say that Satanists are just playing dress-up. Some say they sacrifice children, and others believe they have magical powers. But the truth is much more simple. Most people will agree that Satanism is the antithesis of Christianity. So first we must define what Christianity is. In a sentence, Christianity is the impulse to express brotherly love towards our fellow man. Satanism does not have that impulse at all. In the most simple terms, Satanism can be described with the pop culture phrase, pimps and hoes. If these words upset you, good. We are talking about the nature of evil. And if it makes light of it, even better. These animals are nothing to fear. While the rich and powerful Satanists want you to believe they are witches and warlocks, they are nothing more than pimps and hoes, cannibals, feeding off other people like predatory animals. Completely devoid of the impulse for brotherly love, Satanism is base-level animal tribalism, an animal hierarchy comprised of the pimps at the top, the hoes they control, and the tricks they both exploit. This is the law of the jungle, which has existed for millennia. A survival of the fittest, dog-eat-dog world, where the nice guys always finish last. It is the patriarchy that the anti-Christians claim to oppose, which makes no sense, because we are only able to transcend this ruthlessness with the Christian impulse of brotherly love, where everyone is equally welcome. There is much talk about a battle being waged between good and evil, but this sort of simple black and white duality only exists in our mind. In reality, what's going on is a balancing act between our spirit and our body. While our spirit may be drawn to love and light, our body is an animal with innate animal instincts that cannot easily be suppressed. And like every other species of animal, the primary instincts are survival and reproduction. So as far as mammals go, the female is the ultimate prize in the game of life. A society built upon a Christian ethos of brotherly love is one that honors individual freedom. And the way to satisfy our animal desires for survival with brotherly love is through marriage and raising a family with some degree of selflessness. And without the Christian ethos of brotherly love, the Satanist simply sees women as the most valued commodity, to be bought and sold for one's own selfish desire. Pimps and hoes. Whether it be in the poorest communities or at the top of the pyramid, Satanism is all about control, and the ones at the top have invested everything into their technocratic pop culture media machine, which is their main method of pimping, and they see the brainwashed masses as their hoes, because according to the laws of the jungle, they own them, which is why they resent the Christian ethos, because it is the only thing on earth that stands against them. But the real problem with Satanism is that it keeps an individual from knowing God and discovering their true path. Our free will allows us the choice to either transcend spiritually, which requires a personal relationship with God, or descend into the animal kingdom and forever remain a beast, which is what the pimps and hoes are ultimately selling. But we don't have to buy it. Satanic influence has always been with us, and it is nothing to fear. These Satanist pimps are not gods. They are merely animals playing mind tricks and spinning lies. Redemption is for everyone, and humanity has a choice. We can either submit to the beast system and live like animals, or we can follow the Christian impulse for brotherly love and stand up against evil so that our children will know freedom. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Coming up is Alex, and he's going to be speaking about the Bilderberg. They're meeting up at the Grand Orient Hotel in Washington, D.C. at this time. They started Thursday and will end on Sunday. And they're a super secret, very powerful group that meets yearly about this time every year. I think the last 2 years, because of the COVID, they did not physically have a meeting. But they're up there now, and they'll be meeting today and later on. And I'll be interviewing Tony Gosling, who is an authority on the Bilderberg group, later this evening. That'll be the third hour. So anyway, come on in to thesecrettruth.com and listen to that third hour. It'll be put up pretty late this evening. But anyway, here we go with what Alex has to say about the Bilderberg. And this sort of caught him by surprise. I think Paul Joseph Watson brought it to his attention, but he is covering it, and then we're going to expand it with other coverage later this evening.
The original OG organization has met in D.C. over and over again in Chantilly. This time they didn't. We checked. No one knows where it's at, but we do. It's the Grand Orient inside D.C. The Hong Kong government rented the whole thing out. It's got Secret Service and troops and everything all around it. And that's reportedly where they are meeting right now. And again, why would they hide themselves? Why would they not want you to know that several hundred world leaders are meeting in secret right now in D.C.? Because once you identify them and the fact they control your government and the fact that they're taking your freedoms, it's game over because you now know they're the ones that are doing it to you. And I know as a regular listener, you've heard me harp on this 1,000 times, and you already know this. But the general public still doesn't. A lot of people got arrested. A lot of people got persecuted. A lot of people got attacked and demonized to bring you the information we've got right here today on this June 3rd, Friday edition. It was Westbrook Pegler, back in the 1960s, who was a major syndicated political writer. And his sources started pointing out meetings in Europe, but also meetings every 4 years in the U.S. on the East Coast, where hundreds of members of the Dutch royal family and the British royal family and the presidents and prime ministers would rent out hotels and block them all off and then meet for 4 days. And he went and covered it for a decade before he retired and could never figure out the name or who it was. Then Anthony Sutton, the head of Congressional Archives, was given inside information from Charlotte Iserby, whose father and grandfather were Skull and Bones members, and they knew the name, Bilderberg Group. So it wasn't until the 70s that we even knew the name of the organization. And now we know it, it's like passé. InfoWars isn't up covering Bilderberg this year. No one's covering it physically. We're talking about it. Paul Watts is doing reports about it. Kit Daniels is. Breitbart did. Nobody else I know of. And why is that important? Well, if you're ruled by a shadowy group and they didn't want people to know they existed, because the devil's biggest trick is convincing the world he didn't exist. And then going back about 15 years ago, the media went from denying it existed, because DrudgeReport.com, back when Drudge was running it or whatever's happened, I'm not sure, but back when Drudge was still in charge of it, or back before Drudge changed his mind, I haven't talked to Drudge in years, I don't know. We're showing footage in 2013 north of London covering Bilderberg when thousands of protesters and media showed up. And they went from denying it existed about 15 years ago in the London Guardian, a lot of publications, to saying it existed. But for a good 5 years, there was a paradox where the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Associated Press still said it did not exist. The New York Times, again, in 2008, when it was in Chantilly, Virginia, and we went and covered it, they had helicopters and Marines and Secret Service and everybody, said Jones went to a hotel complex in Virginia outside D.C. and had a full-on hallucination. It didn't exist. They actually said Jones is insane. He imagined men with black sunglasses and earpieces, even though we had the footage. Even though I stayed inside the hotel when it started and they grabbed me and threw me out. Nobody ever got away with that. By the grace of God, we did. Just like Bohemian Grove. The force is with us. So imagine how hard they have fought and fought and fought and fought and fought and fought to even have its existence known. And its former head, and off and on for more than 20 years, he was the head of it. It rotates. Prince Bernhard, husband of the Queen of the Netherlands, he was the head for the first 30 years or so. But Klaus Schwab headed it up for over a decade. So when you see the Davos Group, the World Economic Forum, the New World Order, all their open announcements, we're going to put chips in you and you're going to eat bugs and you'll own nothing and have nothing and love it and there'll be no more any of this. remember that that is the mouthpiece of the Bilderberg Group. And it is the progenitor or the heart of this whole thing. And so it snuck up on me because I'm so busy looking at them out in the open at Davos Group and the UN announcing world government, announcing censorship and forced inoculations and all of it, and saying, Klaus Schwab last week, we control the world in the future. We are now in control. We have penetrated the governments. We own the leadership. No one can stop us. No more. The public has power. We have the power. I mean, these are quotes. Dictatorial James Bond villain announcements. But the original OG organization has met in D.C. over and over again in Chantilly. This time they didn't. We checked. No one knows where it's at, but we do. It's the Grand Orient inside D.C. The Hong Kong government rented the whole thing out. It's got Secret Service and troops and everything all around it. And that's reportedly where they are meeting right now. And again, why would they hide themselves? Why would they not want you to know that several hundred world leaders are meeting in secret right now in D.C.? Because once you identify them and the fact they control your government and the fact that they're taking your freedoms, it's game over because you now know they're the ones that are doing it to you. And I know as a regular listener, you've heard me harp on this 1,000 times, and you already know this. But the general public still doesn't. So we've got exclusive details of this being posted at InfoWars.com. And I'll be honest with you, it snuck up on me. Paul Watson, this morning we were talking, he goes, yeah, I'm going to report on Bilderberg today. I went, oh, I forgot they always meet the first few days in June. And sure enough, they are. And it's been 4 years since they met in the U.S. So now is the time for that meeting to take place. And who's at that meeting? Well, it's very revealing. Senator Kristen Sinema, Finnish Prime Minister Martin Sanna, Pfizer CEO, and others attend Bilderberg meeting in D.C. CIA Director, the Carnegie Endowment, all of them. Here's Breitbart. Global elites converge in Washington, D.C. for Bilderberg Group meeting. Christina Freeland is really the Prime Minister of Canada, works directly for Klaus Schwab. She's on the board of the WEF. She's there. And they've got a press release at BilderbergMeetings.org. See, about 15 years ago, they couldn't cover it up anymore. So they started publishing their agenda and what they were doing, but only lapdog press is allowed. And we have the full list on InfoWars.com of the 2022 list of participants. A who's who of globalist parasites. Paul Watson tweeted, the CEO of Pfizer, the head of the CIA, the director of the ENSC, and the VP of Facebook, the King of Holland, and the Secretary General of NATO are all secretly meeting right now behind closed doors in D.C. It's called Bilderberg, and not a single major media outlet has reported on it. So we've had major victories forcing all of this out in the open.
We're going to move next to a statement by Peter Navarro after his arrest and what he had to say. He had filed a lawsuit against the January 6th group and so forth, and he's alleging that they're way, way off base and that they're in violation of precedents and law and everything else. But Peter Navarro is a fine person. And here's what he said after coming out of the courtroom today after being released.
Following some breaking news out in D.C., former Trump White House official Peter Navarro indicted today on contempt charges after defying a subpoena from the House panel investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. He is speaking right now outside of the U.S. District Court there. We want to roll it from the top.
Another day in paradise here.
So what do you think would happen today?
Let me just make a statement here, if I may. On Tuesday, in this courtroom right here, I filed a civil suit against the Kangaroo Committee on the Hill seven partisan Democrats, two Rhino Republicans. The essence of that civil suit was that the subpoenas issued by the committee are ultra vires, unlawful, and unenforceable. And I made that case based on four legal arguments. The first is that this committee is neither duly authorized nor properly constituted, meaning that it doesn't follow the rules of either the House itself or the committee's own authorizing resolution. I would refer you to the civil suit, but it's H-Res 8 and H-Res 1037. I am not the only one who has filed to question the validity of that kangaroo committee. Nancy Pelosi herself calls that committee unprecedented, and she's absolutely right. The second point, and by the way, my book, Taking Back Trump's America, I need everybody in America to buy that book on Amazon today. That is for two reasons. One is that's going to be my legal defense fund, because these people are coming at me hard. Number two, that book is about why we need to take the House of Representatives back from the kangaroos on Capitol Hill. The second case, part of the civil case, is simply that over a five-year period, Congress has weaponized the investigatory powers of Congress in a way which is unconstitutional. The people of America need to understand Congress has the right to investigate, but only for non-punitive legislative purposes. What that kangaroo committee is doing right now is investigating for punitive purposes. They're essentially acting as judge, jury, and executioner. Their mission, their clear mission, is to prevent Donald John Trump from running for president in 2024 and being elected for president. And people like me are in their way, and they're not coming for me and Trump, they're coming for you. All 74 million of you who voted for Donald John Trump. So, hang on, I'm not finished. You need to do your homework. Read that. That case went out, every one of you, I bet there isn't a single person in here who read that whole case. The third issue is that the Constitution is a prohibition against what's called bills of attainders. Okay? This is bills against undue punishment of citizens of this country. Today, the punishment which was inflicted on a man presumed innocent and innocent until proven guilty demonstrates the utter disregard for the Constitution and the law that the Department of Justice has. I sent them a letter on Wednesday offering a modus vivendi. I told them, contact an individual who would discuss this matter. What did they do? They didn't call me. I spoke to the FBI agent who'd arrest me. I spoke to him Wednesday night. I said, Walter, whatever you need. You don't have to come banging on my door like you did last week getting me out of bed. I'm here to cooperate. Okay? What did they do? Right? I was on my way to Nashville today to do a TV appearance with Mike Huckabee's show. Right? And instead of coming to my door where I live, which, by the way, is right next to the FBI, instead of calling me and say, hey, we need you down at court, we've got a warrant for you, I would have gladly come. What did they do? They intercepted me getting on the plane. And then they put me in handcuffs, they bring me here, they put me in leg irons, they stick me in a cell. By the way, just historical note, I was in John Hinckley's cell. They seem to think that that was like an important historical note. Okay, that's punitive. That what they did to me today violated the Constitution. But Peter, in my lawsuit, I discussed going back to Nixon GSA, and other cases, that what this government is supposed to do when they have an issue such as they've had, and this is not the first rodeo they've had. They've had plenty of people question the validity of their subpoenas. What they're supposed to do is take the least burdensome alternative. I told them, go negotiate with Donald John Trump and his attorneys because I'm in an untenable constitutional position. There's no settled law on this. There's no settled law. And by the way, the law leans squarely towards my right to senior testimonial immunity and President Trump's right to executive privilege. What did they do? They didn't negotiate with the president, as I asked him. That would have been the least burdensome. They didn't file a civil suit like they did with Mears and Bolton back in the Bush administration when they didn't control the Justice Department. What did they do? They just came with the full force of the federal government and put the hammer down trying to intimidate me.
Peter.
All right. Now, hang on.
One last thing.
One last thing. I have represented myself pro se in this matter because part of the Democrats' strategy is to engage in what is called lawfare, which is to say to use the legal system for effectively coercion and illicit ends. I do not want to spend several hundred thousand dollars on lawyers. But the reason why I'm here, and this is not about me, folks, not about me here, this is about a constitutional principle that is important to effective presidential decision making and what the judge.
We're going to move next to additional information that Jay Dyer is going to give us, and we're going to conclude the program with that. And then I'll be putting up on my website, thesecrettruth.com, Jay Dyer's full, 46 minutes, I think, is what he covered on Friday. And he got into some, David Rockefeller ties into the Bilderberg and a bunch of very, very good dynamics. So anyway, listen to this closely, and then when you hear our closing music, then that'll be the end of the program. But I'm going to put this up, as much of this as I can, and look for this. We also have some information on amyloidosis. Amyloidosis is a dynamic that's coming out of the spike protein. And I'm going to have that up on the site, and I'm going to speak a little bit of that on a separate short video. But look for that on thesecrettruth.com. Amyloidosis is a very dangerous side effect of the virus and especially the vaccines. So we've got to really, really look at that very closely. But anyway, here we go. We'll end it with Jay Dyer's lecture on the Bilderberg and David Rockefeller's tie-ins and so forth. Here we go next with Jay Dyer.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Today is an important day because we have Bilderberg. Bilderberg is going on. Of course, it's secret for many years in the sense that people kind of knew it existed, and it was one of these big international steering committee types of meetings with corporate elite, a lot of the heads of media, a lot of people from the Trilateral Commission, from the CFR. And they would meet at Bilderberg, but the press would typically not report this. I mean, you would think that the most powerful people in the world, the wealthiest CEOs, getting together and discussing global policy would be something worthy of media attention. And yet we would only find typically kind of occasional stories here and there. Maybe in the European press, there might be a story here or there. But nobody really talked about it because, of course, there was quite a bit of clampdown and it was intentionally not discussed. But to find out the real origins of Bilderberg, of course, there's quite a few books out there now, but most famously, which you guys have heard me talk about many times in the fourth hour, is David Rockefeller's own memoirs. And to really understand the purpose of these institutions, steering committees, NGOs, think tanks, et cetera, they all kind of fall under the banner of this global elite plan. It helps to go to the man himself, David Rockefeller. Now, the Council on Foreign Relations itself was set up as one of these kind of steering committees in 1921 at the behest of the Rockefellers. And it was intended to be an entity that would help steer global policy modeled on what Dr. Carol Quigley talks about in his books on Chatham House, on the Royal Institute for International Affairs, on Pratt House, and so forth. All of these things are kind of models of what they call roundtable groups. And the roundtable groups, again, are a strategy, a type of governance coming out of the British Empire. In the waning of the British Empire, you have the rise of the American Empire to replace it. And no figure, I don't, in my view, is more important than David Rockefeller. I mean, I think he's really the pivot man here. Obviously, other families are important. Obviously, the joining of the Rothschild and Rockefeller fortunes some years ago was an important move. But in the early phases of the 20th century, it's really the Rockefeller family that dominates this whole arena. And they also extended this influence to many other meetings, which, again, David Rockefeller openly talks about in this famous chapter. Now, maybe you don't want to read this big, you know, boring 600-page, 700-page book, which is understandable, 500 pages, excuse me. But if you want to really understand what's going on, you just need to look at one chapter, and that's chapter 27, and that's what we're going to talk about first. Then we'll look at some more about Bilderberg. But the whole chapter is called Proud Internationalist, Proud Internationalist. And the idea here is that the world needs to be restructured according to what you, when you hear people talk about the New World Order, this is what's being talked about. Okay, it's not a shadowy, unknown thing. It's not some thing that people are just throwing around. Oh, I don't know what it is, but it's just this term that somebody, no, it's a very precise, very clear public thing in all of these big fat global elite texts. And chapter 27 is all about that. It's called Proud Internationalist. And it begins with a quote, and it says, "In my lifetime, the pursuits as an internationalist might best be summarized by my extraordinary day in 1995. And what he's talking about in 1995 relates to the CFR, the United Nations, and what he calls a kind of capitalist mechanism for restructuring the world. It's a new way to structure the world. And he says, now, a lot of people don't like this. A lot of people have said, hey, you're part of a communist conspiracy. And he says, it's neither capitalist nor communist. It's a new way of approaching all this. Now, he is a monopoly capitalist. But if you guys, everybody knows, right, he wrote the two editorials where he famously said that Mao's China is a great experiment, nothing wrong with it. We know that the OSS trained Mao's guerrillas, and so a lot of people at Yale, Skull and Bones, they were actually for Maoism, and they did that to restructure and change the landscape of China. And David Rockefeller has chapters in the middle of this book, by the way, about putting Chase Bank in communist China, restructuring China, his positive attitude towards China, because he felt that it could also be a eugenics-based technocratic government eventually, right? And that's, of course, where we see China going, all at the behest of these Western powers and support. Now, when we come back, we're going to get into what is internationalism on the Alex Jones Show. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We are discussing, first, ideas of the internationalist clique, the monopoly capitalist, and their greatest allies and tools, the socialist communists, and how they both share a common ideology of creating a global single monoculture that would be the international New World Order. And for people that are skeptics, David Rockefeller has a giant chapter in his giant book on it. Again, one of the wealthiest men in the history of the country, one of the most influential, who steered the path of America, basically, through his family, through their funding, through their foundations, through the United Nations, through all of these different entities that they helped set up, including the CFR, Trilateral Commission, Institute for Pacific Relations, all of which are described at length in Dr. Carol Quigley's Strategy and Hope as well. And in this chapter, Rockefeller says that, well, a lot of people are not happy with this because they get confused and they think, well, is he a capitalist? But he supports socialism and Maoism. What's going on here? And, of course, he goes on to say that it's not really about either of those things, right? Ultimately, this is about, he says, what people call a secret cabal. They say that David Rockefeller is part of an influential conspiracy, a secret cabal to change the world into an international single global world order. and especially a single economic structure. And he says, not only do I agree with this, I stand guilty of this, and I am proud of it. And I am proud of it. Low IQ skeptics, can you read? Do you see what that says? It says, and I am proud of it. I even put right there for you, famous quote. Okay. And you see that. The people are, I mean, it's amazing the sort of doubling down delusion, right, that people get into when they just, ah, it doesn't exist, you're crazy, conspiracy theorist. And then it's right here on the page. Can you read? Can you read? He says, the people that oppose me, he says, I would call them populists. You mean people who actually support the idea of humans and other people, right? That's what he means by populism, and not being ruled by money-obsessed oligarchs. He says, those are populists. He says, populists, call it a conspiracy. But, you know, what's funny in a lot of these guys' writings, they say, well, it's not a conspiracy, right, which their normie minions in the media say, ha-ha, see, there's no conspiracy. He says, he's not part of a conspiracy. Well, clearly it's not a conspiracy if he says he's not in one. But then he goes on to say it's not a conspiracy because it's in the open. So that's what he says. He says, yeah, there's no secret conspiracy because it's all in the open. It's in the book. Okay, it's not a secret conspiracy if the book says publicly as a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, that, yeah, I'm here trying to control government. Okay. So again, it shouldn't be a problem. And then he says, here are some of the institutions that we help set up and fund to create this international order. The United Nations, the Rockefeller family donated the land for the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, and we also help get NAFTA done. And he says, anybody that opposes this, we just call them isolationists. Isolationists. Remember Ron Paul? Well, I think we need all this Federal Reserve. Well, no, I'm not knocking. I like Ron Paul. It's just, you know, I like to do impressions. Okay, don't get mad. People say, why is he impersonating Ron Paul? Somebody get him. I like Ron Paul. I'm just being goofy, okay?
Well, I think we need to audit the Fed.
Well, Ron Paul was right. And what did they call Ron Paul, right, back in 2007-8, right? He's an isolationist. He doesn't want America involved in the global economy. But no, it's because it's a scam. Okay, do you understand that the real way the world is run is on the basis of scams? Okay, and of course, right, Ron Paul, great politician and statesman, was able to see that. He was right. And not just Ron Paul, I mean, many people even in the public sphere, right? Previous, even Ronald Reagan at one point even talked about this, right, when he was running. He would talk about CFR, he would talk about the UN, he would talk about these kinds of things being a problem. And I think everybody knows kind of what maybe happened to Ronald Reagan at one point when he talked about those things. But David Rockefeller says, yeah, all of these institutions, we are involved in this, and these are all to create, first of all, a global economic order. If we create a global economic order, then what will naturally flow from that is a single world currency, a single world technocratic order, that we can then control first and foremost through the currency, through the economy. So as everybody knows, their economic model is a debt-based fiat system. It's where central banking entities that are privately owned can print as much money as they want. And everybody that's in this, the more conservative Austrian school of economics, et cetera, people that believe that there should be sound monetary policy, what has everybody in that camp always said? Right. You can't have a fiat system. This shock doctrine system will destroy the economy. And ever since the shock doctrine, what has happened? Gigantic national debt going crazy. Trillions of dollars, trillions and trillions. Print more. Kufid. What was that? Well, I did videos when the Kufid narrative first started happening saying this is an economic attack. Okay. This is an attack on the economy. And then what happens? Massive centralization of wealth, putting massive amounts, right, of middle class people, small business owners out of business. Now you got to go to Amazon, Walmart, et cetera. All of those corporations were intimately connected to and involved in this gigantic scam. Look at Gil Bates, right? He just happens to have the answers. He's going to sell you baby formula. He's going to sell you Beyond Meat, fake meat, because of the crises that suddenly occur. So the inflation, the money printing, and they just gaslight everybody, right? They knew good and well when they printed all of those stimulus checks and all the bonuses and all that, that we would have to pay for it. Now we're all paying for all of this quantitative easing, money printing, debt scams. And it's theft of wealth and energy over time. That's what all this is. Inflation is stealing from you over time in a gradual way. But because it's gradual, you don't notice it, right? Your honey buns go from $1.50 to $1.75 to $2 in a few years, right? By the way, you shouldn't be eating honey buns. Don't ever eat honey buns. They're disgusting. But it seems like basically all of the South, like everybody just lives on honey buns, because everybody in the South is now gigantic, by the way. Stop eating garbage food. Everybody, listen, stop eating honey buns. Why are you anything? When you go in the grocery store, basically only eat things that are on the outer rim of the grocery store. That's it. Anything in the middle, do not eat that. That's lesson number one today. Don't eat anything that has Bill Gates's food crap. Don't eat anything. None of that. Okay. Bill Gates wants you eating honey buns. Don't eat honey buns. Now the honey bun companies are going to try to expose me. Anyway, so the internationalists, they want to set up this connected global order through economy first and foremost. That's what the 20th century and its wars were all about, erecting this global order. Remember, Tragedy and Hope says the two world wars of the 20th century were about erecting the League of Nations, then the United Nations, and then through the Cold War, further integration into the synthesis of Eastern Bloc communism, Western monopoly capitalism. Right? Put these two together, the Hegelian synthesis, problem, reaction, solution, and what you get out of that is the nascent world order. That is what is being rolled out right now. Again, do you guys understand? Everybody's now heard about Klaus. They've heard about the World Economic Forum. They've heard about Bilderberg and these groups. But do they realize that they've been meeting for years and years and years and years talking about the very things that David Rockefeller says these things were created to create? IMF, WTO, NAFTA, UN, CFR, trilateral, Bilderberg. There's a section in here on Bilderberg, which we're going to look at in a minute. He says that what I would call these entities like the CFR and so forth, he says these are influencers. These are influencing societies. That's what they're about. So do they control everything as the people do when people counter us with their red herrings and straw men? Well, you think the Bilderberg controls everything in the world? No, no, no. Nobody ever said that. They're steering committees, policy planning committees, debate committees, and what he calls influencers. They influence the formation of American policy, he says. Don't go anywhere. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Just finishing up a plate of hot honey buns. And I wanted to move on to the next section where we discover that David Rockefeller is a big fan, a big promoter, the origins of the Bilderberg Group. So as he moves on in page 410 of his biography, by the way, I did want to read one quote before we got to Bilderberg, where David Rockefeller says on page 324, the powers of international capital had a far-reaching plan, no less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands to dominate the political systems of every country and the economy of all the world as a whole. The secret is that they have annexed from governments, monarchies, and republics the power to create the world's money.